months after we launched, the type of email that I sent to the client is all about getting a little insight into the type of results they got potentially after we launched their website or their brand. So what I would do is just say, hey, quick check-in. It's been a month since we launched. Wanted to see how your new website is treating you. What kind of feedback did you get from your audience? How did it resonate? Did you get any, you know, cool things that happened during this month? Especially if it's a online store, for example, then they have tons of data they can share with you. But even if it's not, even if it's a service provider, you can still, you know, get a peek at their analytics or something like this. And then what I do is that I take that information and I update their testimonial or their case study, because suddenly we have more tangible results that you can share with future clients, prospects. So that's really juicy stuff. So that first follow-up 1 month later, it's not like, so are you ready to spend more money with me yet? It's not going to be about that. It's just going to be like, hey, just want to see how your new brand is doing, how your new website is. Do you get any cool results and anything cool you can share with me? So it's just going to be that.
Welcome to the Profitable Graphic Designer Podcast. I'm Katie Sandel, brand strategist, designer, and the CEO of a successful six-figure design agency. I teach brand, graphic, and web designers how to get more clients, increase their pricing, and build profitable design businesses in a simple and sustainable way. We have online programs, courses, and templates that you can use, as well as our coaching and mastermind high-touch experience for creatives. You can find out more about starting and growing your design business at aventiveacademy.com. But until then, grab a cup of coffee and join me in today's podcast episode. Hello, everyone. In today's episode of the Profitable Graphic Designer Podcast, I'm bringing you a conversion-focused brand and web designer, Yevgenia, and you can call her Gigi, with 1-6 Creative. Today, we are talking about a topic that we haven't covered on this podcast yet, and it's all about becoming an indispensable designer. Gigi will explain what that means in a moment, but before she does that, I would like to ask her to introduce herself and tell us who she is and what she does.
Hi, Katie or Xenia. Aha.
Hi. Yes.
Thank you so much for having me. I've been on a couple of podcasts and workshops. I think you're one of the only ones who committed to pronouncing my name right. Nobody calls me Yevgenia online. But thank you. It's really nice to hear your actual name. Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in. So yes, I'm Yevgenia Gigi, mostly well known as Gigi. I'm a conversion-led designer and also a business educator for creatives. And my background is in marketing and in neuromarketing specifically and business management. I kind of became a designer, I like to say accidentally. I always was very creative as a child, but my family kind of motivated me to follow a more traditional career path, which meant that I, you know, went to university, graduated, got a second degree, went to work as a marketing director, then a brand executive, and then realized that I don't think corporate life is for me. I don't think that this is what I'm meant to do. And I remember we were approaching Christmas holidays and I told my now husband, back then boyfriend, like, I think I'm going to quit. I think after the holidays, I'm going to quit. Like, okay, what are you going to do? Like, I have no idea, but I'm quitting. Like, I can't do this anymore. I was pretty just miserable physically, mentally. And, you know, I don't want to say that it's like a fifth sense, but sometimes you're in a position where just, you know, that you're not supposed to be here. And I tried to kind of follow that traditional path and I was just not happy. And despite the fact that, you know, I tried to like send some applications, do the whole like corporate thing, sending 50 CVs and hearing from two out of these 50 companies as you do, I just realized, you know what? I think I need to do something different and maybe do something of my own, or at least take some time for myself. And I had 3 months of savings. And I said, you know what? If in 3 months I don't figure it out, or at least I don't find what I want to do, fair enough. We'll go and do something else. I was still young. I still had time to, you know, change my path and pivot if I wanted to. That was back in 2016. And I'd like to say, you know, I became a popular and well-paid designer overnight, and I got so many clients within the first couple of weeks. Absolutely not. I struggled like crazy at first. I was on Upwork, realized that Upwork is not the place to find clients, at least for me. I know some people are very, you know, make some really good money there, but that was not my case.
The competition is just huge.
The competition is huge back then. I think now the platform is a little bit more, I guess, you know, elevated. Maybe you can find some better paid gigs now. But back then, I remember I was paid $150 for a 20, I think, 6-page brochure. And I thought, this is it. I'm a designer now. You know, I hit the jackpot.
Yeah.
But it's part of the experience, right? It's part of the growth. I know that I was not an overnight success. It took me about 8 months to even commit to actually launching, like really going full in into design, into running a design agency. Before then, I was figuring it out and taking all sorts of really odd jobs and trying different things. And eventually, things started picking up one client after another, you know, that snowball effect. But it's going to sound weird. It's probably not the best type of promotion for myself. I'm not the best designer out there. And I knew it back then. Self-taught designer. I can't say that I have some mad design skills. I'm a good designer, but I'm not incredible designer. There are so many more talented designers than I am out there. But I wanted to find what is different about me and how I run my business. Why are my clients keep coming back if I'm not the best designer out there? And how can I amplify that, right? So it was this whole like business mindset that I had, you know, from university, from my job experience, my corporate experience. It kept creeping up on me and making me think beyond just design. Because at my old job, it was all about, okay, how can we increase our brand awareness? How can we promote our business? How can we attract new clients? And back then, where I was working for a consultancy that was had very high-end clients, high net worth clients as part of their clientele. So it was very interesting, how can we attract this level of clients into our consultancy? And that kind of always motivated me to go and try different things and promote myself in different ways and create a client experience that allows me to chase less, but increase my clients' value. So to simplify things, it was all, for me, it was all about figuring out, how can I stop running after every single lead and focus on the clients I already have so that they can do the marketing for me, so that they can promote me through word of mouth, through referrals, through repeat projects, etc. And that's how I really started focusing more on conversion-led design, on client experience, on nurturing client relationships, to the point where now, through my social media, through my marketing channels, I don't really talk to clients anymore. I talk mostly to other designers because I now have this whole different side of my business that is all about education for designers. But the design side of my business still is running, I don't want to say on autopilot, because definitely not. There's a lot of work still involved. But my past clients can help me do the marketing for me so that I can still get leads into my pipeline.
Yeah, amazing. Well, thank you so much for this intro and letting us know how it all started. I'm going to put the questions to the side because I have the whole list of questions in front of me. But first, I want to ask you, because this is something that we don't hear very often, what does it mean to be a conversion-led designer?
So a conversion-led designer, the way that I position it, at least in my marketing for my clients, is that we focus on conversions and data first and design second. And that's because the type of clients that I attract, they're very focused on strategy. They're very focused on return on investment, on more quantitative data rather than qualitative, right? So in my case, of course, I mean, I want my clients' brands, websites to look amazing, but there is a big part of my process revolves around strategy, not just brand strategy, but also looking at data, at analytics, before we actually start designing, really understanding who their clients are. Sometimes with bigger clients, we'll conduct client interviews even to understand their purchase behavior, to understand their psychological behavior, the customer journey. All of that is part of the pre-work before I dive into design. Not with every client. I can't say that every single one of my clients is obsessed with data and conversions. And obviously, you know, with the more strategy work is involved, the more expensive the project is. Some clients want something, a quicker solution. And that means that we're doing less strategy, more design work. But in general, my focus and what I'm very interested in is understanding how can we amplify clients' results and the return on their investment with the power of design.
I love that. I love that. So that's what we do in my branding and design agency as well. We start with the brand strategy, which is not a typical just brand strategy, what you can find online. Over time, we made a lot of changes to our process and documents. And it's something in between like business and brand strategy, like really mm-hmm. focus on the goals. And then once we have that in hand, then we translate that into visuals because it's very important that everything matches. Versus like in the past, when I was like a solo freelancer working on, you know, like just getting like any type of freelance design clients, I was just like sending them a questionnaire and then I got like random answers and then I designed something hoping they will like it.
Yeah, absolutely. And to be honest, I mean, I started exactly the same way. You know, if somebody's has a process like this right now, I don't want to shame you because maybe that works for you and your clients as well. Maybe that's exactly what your clients need. But I started the same way. I would send this like three-part questionnaire. Now that I think about this process, that's like, what were you thinking?
That is so much homework to the client. Like, they don't want.
And I remember it was like, I was using Dubsado back then. It's like they complete phase one and then automatically they get an email with, hey, here's phase two. And it's just like this long-ass questionnaire. And then they complete that and they get phase three. And I was like, oh, this is so awesome. I'm gathering so much information and so much data about my clients. That's how that's what I thought I was getting. But you could also see, I don't remember why, I was kind of reviewing some of those early client questionnaires for something or for a workshop I'm running. And you can just see a decline in the quality of the answers with every single question. It's so funny. Now exactly. I don't do questionnaires at all. I do live calls with my clients. So we have live strategy calls instead of questionnaires, simply because I realized that my thinking was that if I send a questionnaire and the client spends, let's say, an hour answering it, I am saving that hour. But that's not the case. Every single time I would actually waste another hour or two reviewing the answers, getting back to the client, asking them for more details. And in the end, you end up wasting more time than jumping on a two-hour call with your client to run a live workshop session. And for me, live workshops are such a great way of getting to know your clients a little bit more intimately and establishing that relationship, which is all part of becoming that indispensable designer for your clients, that it's work for my process. It's not for everyone, but it works for us.
Yeah, definitely. Now, can you help us figure out like what can you define like what it means to be an indispensable designer?
So for me, an indispensable designer is a designer that becomes such an important part of the client's team that they cannot envision going with someone else. And it sounds logical in theory, right? I mean, of course, we all want to become indispensable for our clients. But what I'm seeing with my students, or even with myself at the beginning of my process when I was learning the ropes, is that it's not something that you just consciously think about. It's not integrated in your client experience. It's not integrated in your process. Freelancers, we are almost wired to see the beginning of the project and the end of the project. And then hasta la vista, let me move on to the next one because I have like things in my pipeline and we just forget about past clients. I have so many clients I've never spoken to ever again, especially like in this first, I would say 2 years. And that's just money that you're just leaving on the table because I bet those clients needed your help again. Like I'm ready to bet money on this. Maybe some of them fold. I have clients whose businesses closed, but I bet that they needed some help again. And the fact that they didn't reach out to you is, that's going to sound harsh, but it is kind of on you because our clients don't think about us 24/7. Like they don't, they have lives, they have businesses to run. And I hear this a lot from my clients even today. Sometimes when I reach out to them, seeing if I can be of help, if there's anything that they need help with, like, oh, I have this thing actually, but I just thought that you were super busy. I see you like on your stories and your reels and you have a launch going on. So I didn't want to bother you. Bother me, please. Bother me. Tell me how I can help you. So becoming indispensable is seeking proactive action to really being integrated in your client's business and helping them not just on one project, two projects, but years ahead. I have clients I worked with for 3-4 years now. And yes, maybe there are designers who can do what I do for cheaper, but because I know their business inside out and I've been with them for so long, it would take too much effort to train someone again rather than, you know, paying me extra to do the work faster in many cases. So yeah, that's what it means to be indispensable.
Yeah. And like if someone is a brand designer and they've completed, let's say, branding for a client, like maybe brand strategy and visual identity, what else can they offer to their clients if they are brand designers only and the project is simply completed? Like how do they continue that relationship?
Well, depending on the type of clients you work with, right? So I'm going to take a client a year ago, we completed a project for her. She's a personal stylist. And if I had that one project only, one-off mentality, we're going to call it like that. If I had that one-off mentality, I would have launched her project and that's it, right?
You're done with it, yeah.
But this client needs so many additional assets for their business that keeps on updating. For example, on a seasonal basis, they need to release they create this kind of a new, it's not a brochure, it's like an album of the capsule wardrobe for the next season. And they need to constantly update that. Yes, we could create a Canva template for her, and you know, she can just update it herself, but she actually didn't want to. She's like, guys, like I don't want to waste time creating this myself. So on a quarterly basis, we do that for her. We create social media graphics for her, even though we did equip her with social media templates. I think I created 14, 16 maybe templates for her to use, but she just wants more. She wants more diversity. There's a lot of different things that you can still create for your client. But sometimes as part of our deliverables, we try to, and I'm like that as well, a lot of the times when we try to equip them with things that will make their life easier and for them to require less of us, again, like templates, you know, do it yourself, DIY. But for a lot of clients, this just doesn't work. Clients just don't actually want to spend time doing this themselves. But if you don't offer that, if you don't tell them about it, they won't know. They won't know that actually you can do it. I remember for some time before I started offering more a la carte services for past clients, I would say like a hard no on any additional deliverables. Like we do this package for branding and this package for web and we don't do anything outside of it. And that's just like, imagine the client like, yeah, but we need a flyer. No, we don't do that. Go and ask someone else.
Yeah. And then they have to search for different designers. Different designers have maybe different styles. And even when you provide the brand guide and style guide, like we're they know how things should look like, it's still not the same. Then they have to communicate with you and communicate with someone else. So yeah, I've definitely had clients who would come back to me, even though my focus really is on branding and websites. And we do labels and packaging because my company is focused on the product-based businesses who are in the health and wellness space mostly. But still, people would come asking for a brochure, for social media graphics, for business cards, for flyers, for additional things. And we're not going to say no to that. I feel like it's very important for designers, like for everyone who's listening to this, to know their core offers so that they're not all over the place, you know, like on social media. You don't have to talk about business cards and flyers and websites and logos and whatnot. You can focus on your core offer, but still have the capacity to offer a lot more things if you want to keep the client long term.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of the time, clients don't really know what they, like, what extra do they need. And they probably, like, the moment you launch a brand, the moment you launch a project is not the time to ask for extra work. This is not when, like, oh, by the way, we can also do this and that and this and that. That's not really where you ask for that. You ask for it later, once they started incorporating their new brand, once they started using their new website. I have this nurture sequence that I use with my clients after the project is over that is a year long. So I have specific points throughout the year after we launch a project when I'm going to connect, reconnect with a client and see and just maintain conversation, not be like, hey, it's been 3 months. Do you have any extra work for me? No, that's not how you do it. You nurture the relationship. You stay in touch with your client. And as a natural part of the conversation, things will come up. I see a client who's preparing for a launch. I will drop her an email and say, hey, I saw this on the stories. That's amazing. I'm so proud of you. I checked out your, you know, because I sometimes have still access to the client's website. I checked out the sales page you created for that. I saw a couple of things that weren't quite working. Do you need any help? Or sometimes I would go on a client site. I will see that a pop-up is broken and it will literally take me 2 minutes to fix it. I'll fix it. I'll pop an email to the client, say, hey, by the way, I checked out your site, saw this pop up. I fixed it. No biggie. Is there anything else you need help with since we're here? So it's kind of like a natural conversation, but you need to take that first step. You need to make that offer, that effort to be part of the client's relationship. Otherwise, the clients are just gone after they finish the project, because in their mindset, it's also like that. If they're hiring a freelancer, their immediate thought is not, oh, I'm going to find a freelancer who's going to become a really important part of my team, and I'm going to work for them for years to come. It's not a natural instinct for them. But if you build a relationship for them, this client will keep coming back for you with more projects, and they will bring more clients to you as well.
Yeah, definitely. I was just about to ask, like, what are some practical strategies for, like, building long-lasting relationships with clients to really ensure they keep coming back for more design services? And I'm glad you mentioned those too. Is there anything else that you would suggest to designers that they should be doing, like, in terms of, like, how to be in front of the clients so that clients think of them every time and they need something extra?
So a very simple thing is social media, interacting with your client on social media. I'm not saying commenting on every single story and being like, yay, you, cheering for you, you're doing great. No, that will become quickly annoying. But just being part of their audience, naturally part of their audience, hyping them up when need be. So, you know, if you see your client launching a new product, or they got mentioned, I recently had a client that was mentioned in Forbes, sharing that on your page and saying, so proud of my clients, even if it has nothing to do with you. You know, the fact that my client got mentioned in Forbes has nothing to do with the work we've done together, but I'm so proud of them. They've done such an amazing job. And if you haven't talked to your client in some time, it's such a great way to reconnect, because chances are they're going to drop in your stories, in your DMs, and say, hey, thank you for sharing. That's when you can start the conversation. How have you been doing? What's been happening? All of that. So that's one, simply, you know, being part of their audience and nurturing your relationships through there. Some other things I want to mention, the nurture sequence that I have, My sequence is broken down into a follow-up 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, and 12 months after we launch the project. We don't always go to 12 months. Like, you know, clients often come back way earlier before that. But one really simple thing that you can do is send a brandversary gift a year after you launch their project. So this is kind of like just to celebrate the launch of their new website or the launch of their new brand. Send them, it doesn't have to be expensive. You can just send them a little card with their logo on it and say, hey, your brand is a year old. Congratulations. Or your rebrand is a year old. How amazing. And that's a really easy way, especially if you haven't talked in a very long time, that's a very easy way to reconnect. If you don't have your client's address, you can send a virtual card. That's also fine. You can just send an email. You don't need to spend money at all. You can just send an email. Or before I used to send physical card, I would actually design a little graphic for them to share on social media and say, hey, in a week's time, your brand is going to be a year old. Here's a little graphic for you, thinking of you, so proud of the amazing work we've done. And again, it's an opportunity to start the conversation. So it doesn't have to be super complex. It just has to be thoughtful, you know, just naturally thoughtful relationship with someone who you don't just see as a transaction. I think that's a really important thing.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that also that increases the chance of them thinking of you like all the time, even when they're in their circles and sending you referrals, because it's not just like maybe they really don't need anything for the next 2 years. Like I've definitely had clients who really don't need anything for many years after they've done with us, because maybe they have like an intern or someone who is a designer for social media for them and things like that. But they keep sending me referrals because they know like the experience, like that they went through. And also they keep thinking of me because I keep reaching out. So it's not just about, you know, working for that one client, but really getting even more clients. Now, I do have another question. So like, what advice do you have for designers who are maybe just starting out and want to establish themselves as indispensable designers, like from the beginning of their careers, but the challenge is that maybe they haven't had many clients to go back to. So they're still in the process of like looking for new clients.
So before I answer that, I just want to comment what you said earlier about referrals, because it's true. Part of being indispensable, like the referrals that your clients send, is also a huge bonus. You basically, what you do is you increase your client's lifetime value. Every client has some sort of lifetime value, and it's depending on the type of offer you have, depending on how many times the client keeps back coming for more, or how many clients they refer to you. That's all of that is going to increase their lifetime value. So absolutely, it's not about just working with one client, but also creating a relationship with them that will make them think of you when they know that someone needs help. Because a lot of the time, it's very funny. I was speaking with someone a couple of weeks back at a live networking event here, and we were talking about online business, and she was telling me about how she's really struggling with copywriting. And I was like, yeah, I know, like, you know, copywriting is really hard. And then we started talking about ChatGPT and AI and how you can use that. And towards the end of the network, I was like, hold on, I am a copywriter. Like, I have so many copywriters I've worked with. Why didn't I mention it in the conversation? And then she already left. So I messaged her, sent her a couple of details, sent her a couple of contacts. I don't know if she reached out to any of them, but it's just to show that sometimes in the middle of the conversation, we kind of forget, you know, that we worked with a designer, we worked with a copywriter, a photographer. It just doesn't come up sometimes. But if you keep the relationship going, if you're constantly kind of touch base with your client, it definitely helps staying top of mind in the moment for them. So I just wanted to kind of comment on that.
Yeah. And also, it's funny that you mentioned that, because yesterday I was looking for someone who's going to edit our reels in the future and whatnot. And I remember this one girl reaching out to us like maybe 6-8 months ago. Like, I don't remember. And I really liked her email. I responded to her. We were talking back and forth. And I said that I don't have time, that I don't have the capacity at the moment. And if she can reach out in a few months, and she never did. And I'm like, but I really wanted to hire her. And then yesterday I spent like 20 minutes going through my inbox. And then I'm like, you know what? Never mind. I'll just go on Instagram and find someone else. Like it's, I can't.
Oh, no. If you're listening to this podcast episode, reach out to Katie now. Oh no. But that's such a good example of how not reaching out and not touching base, not following up. You can, again, you can lose clients that way and leave money on the table. Absolutely.
Definitely. And I was also in touch with one attorney, basically for entrepreneurs here in Austin. And one of my clients needed to register like her business name or something like that. And I couldn't remember the name of that attorney. Like I was like, we had a conversation. We were on Zoom. Everything went great. But I just like, simply don't remember. It was over 6 months ago. She never reached out again. She did like cold emailing. And usually I don't, well, I try to respond. I really try to respond.
It's okay. But you can say you don't. I don't. I'm sorry.
Not to all of them. Sometimes when I get like, hi, name, I'm like, okay, that's not working. Or when they do like, it's not even BCC, it's like CC. And then I see all the other emails and I'm like, no. I'm not.
Classic mistake.
Exactly. But long story short, like people and business owners who are the target of designers are busy and they don't have time to think of you. They're thinking about growing their business, about expanding, about hiring, about selling more products or getting more people to the door if they have services and whatnot. And we have to do something in order to be in front of them. Like, what would you say? Like, how do you network? Like, what do you do? How do you stay in touch? Like, how do you nurture your current relationships? I know you mentioned you follow up, but like, how often? And what do you say? Like, what would designers say now a month after a project is completed? Like, hey, how are you?
A month, exactly. I mean, a month after we launch, it's, for me, it's actually the goal. Let me rephrase that. A month after we launched, the type of email that I sent to the client is all about getting a little insight into the type of results they got potentially after we launched their website or their brand. So what I would do is just say, hey, quick check-in. It's been a month since we launched. Wanted to see how your new website is treating you. What kind of feedback did you get from your audience? How did it resonate? Did you get any, you know, cool things that happened during this month? Especially if it's a online store, for example, then they have tons of data they can share with you. But even if it's not, even if it's a service provider, you can still, you know, get a peek at their analytics or something like this. And then what I do is that I take that information and I update their testimonial or their case study, because suddenly we have more tangible results that you can share with future clients, prospects. So that's really juicy stuff. So that first follow up 1 month later, it's not like, so are you ready to spend more money with me yet? It's not going to be about that. It's just going to be like, hey, just want to see how your new brand is doing, how your new website is. Do you get any cool results and anything cool you can share with me? So it's just going to be that. On the second one, the three mark one, depending on the relationship, again, depending on the project and stuff, this might be the email where I might pop in again, doing a quick check-in, seeing if everything is working fine, maybe looking at the website myself, because sometimes clients get very eager to try and play with their website after the launch. Like, oh, let me see if I can like do this and change the color here. So I like to keep an eye just in case. Usually I include 14 days like tech support after we launch. But for some reason, on day 15, this is when things are going to go wrong. This is when they try to create a new page or change the banner or something like that. So, you know, I keep an eye. But at the 3 month mark, I might ask for a referral. I might say like, hey, if they haven't referred anyone yet, I might say, hey, do you know of anyone who may also need a similar, like a website or someone in your circles? If so, I'd be super grateful if you could connect with me. You know, obviously the best clients always come from best clients. So if you know of anyone, I'd be super grateful. Again, so really casual. And the 6 months, depending on the conversation we had so far, maybe usually I might see something on social media that they're launching something new. So I might just check in. It's not always and ask. That's the thing. Like, not every single conversation needs to be a transaction with your clients. It's just checking in and see how things are going. And a lot of the time, the pattern that I'm seeing is that either they refer me shortly after we reconnected. So, you know, maybe we had an exchange of emails and 5 days later, I get a referral from that client because I was top of mind for them because we just had a conversation and they, I don't know, they remember that they have a friend who's starting a business. Why not connect them with Gigi, with Katie to build their new brand or website? So usually that's how it works. You won't always get what you want in the moment. It's you have to think a little bit more long term with those things.
Definitely. And I think it's very similar when people go to networking events. So here in Austin, we have a lot of networking events and I love going to networking events. I'm an extrovert, so I have to be around people. And in the past, I was going to networking events to get clients and I was not getting them because every conversation I had with people, I always had that like money in my mind, you know, like how can I, you know, get a client? How can I, like how you mentioned, like not every communication, not every contact has to be focused on, like, I don't know how I mentioned it, but basically like transaction. Yeah, exactly. So, but that was my focus in the past, you know, like for 2 years, I go to networking events and I'm not getting clients until I switched to how about I go to networking event to make friends, just connect with people and see where that goes. Like I did have like kind of like elevator pitch just so I can explain what I do. But it was mostly like, I go there, make friends. And that's when I started seeing results because those people started to think of me as someone who's going to help them and not sell them. So mm-hmm. I didn't always have to ask for something. I actually didn't have to ask for anything. They just simply knew what I do. And, you know, they keep thinking about me.
Yeah. It's similar to... a lead generation strategy I share with students, and maybe you do the same in your academy, where some of my first clients came from online communities, Facebook groups, this kind of stuff. And for weeks, if not months, my goal was not to get clients, but just share value, like just be useful. And I basically joined a couple, I was living back in London, and I joined a couple of online communities for women own businesses. And anytime someone had a question, not even just related to design, because it's rare that, you know, somebody was going to be like, which color should I use for my call to action on my website? You know, it's usually not this type of question, but anything design related, marketing related, I was there, you know, I was like, just sharing value. I don't need anything in return. And slowly people start associating me with, you know, marketing advice, branding advice, brand development. And some of my first bigger clients, my very first clients came from friends and relatives, cousins, friends of friends. I think for lots of us, it's like that. But some of my bigger clients, they came from online communities because I was just there. It's easier for me to network in online communities because I'm a huge introvert and live events, just like I'm dripping in sweat.
And I'm like the opposite.
Somewhere in the corner.
And I'm like the opposite. I go with a goal to meet not more than 10 people.
Oh my
I have
God.
To set the goal because I'm like, no.
This is my nightmare. I remember I went to during COVID at the very beginning, I went to a freelancer's Christmas party in London by myself. And I stayed there for 16 minutes and I left. I couldn't. I panicked. I was in the corner and it was too loud. I couldn't understand how people were talking to each other. But again, I think this just goes to show that there are so many different strategies that can work for all different kinds of personalities. If you're an introvert,
exactly.
Cool, go meet people in real life, show your true personality, connect with people, have fun. I think fun is a huge aspect. If you're more introverted like I am, there are so many online communities where you can be part of. Launch, I don't know, go on podcasts. Podcast super easy for me because it's kind of like behind the screen and you don't, you know, you can't smell my sweat.
Yeah. I love that you mentioned fun because that's what's all about. We didn't start our businesses to be like employees for our clients.
I think that fun is, it's so, so important. For example, I go to one of the networking events, like they're in the mornings and it's like 8 or 8:30 a.m. And I have so much fun there. I basically go for a coffee and I just like hang out with people. I meet so many people and like friends, and it's like so much fun and I get so much energy. And then I come home and work alone for the rest of the day, because that's just like the type of person that I am. And I really like going to networking events, but I also like being in my four walls and getting things done and like really being productive. So
you're describing like my nightmare. I went to Porto in April for Chris Doe's event from the future. And I met some of my students in real life there. And one of the students, she messaged me after saying like how excited she was to meet me. And she's like, "You're so shy in real life." I was like, "I know." I'm terrible in real life. It took me a week to recover from that event because I met so many people and like my social meter was just completely depleted. But again, you know, there are marketing strategies different for any type of personality out there.
Exactly. That's why I believe that there is no one size fits all. There's like every single marketing strategy does work. It's just a matter of what's going to work for you.
And it's I think it's also a matter of commitment. I, you know, with some of my coaching students, they come to me super motivated to do things and change the way that they do things. And they don't commit to it. And I'm very practical in my coaching. Like, this is what you need to do. Like, commit to that for a bit, not for 3 days. Commit to that for a couple of weeks. It takes time. And I know that currently the world is so fast paced. We want quick results. You know, AI can spit out a website in 30 seconds and it takes you 3-4 weeks. Like, what the heck? I know we want really quick results, but it doesn't work like that. You need to commit to see change. And especially if it's a different way of doing things, if it's something that you're not used to, it will take practice. Don't speed this process up.
Exactly. I was going to networking events back when I was living in Denver. This is now even more than your nightmare. I was going to 3 to 5 different networking events per week. for a year. It was my part-time job, but it was when I quit my 9-to-5. I realized that I, like, how am I going to get clients? Am I going to blog? Not really, because it's, to me, not so inspiring. It's kind of boring. You're just sitting at home, to me. Like, how am I going to get clients? Okay, I'm posting on Craigslist at that time. Instagram wasn't a thing. It's just started. I don't think it even existed, like the business side of Instagram. It was just like the personal profile, like kind of section. And basically, I was just going to networking events for a year. And that's when I started seeing results. Yeah, it just takes time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. One extra strategy I wanted to share here, and it's something that I've started doing, well, fairly recently, considering that I started my business 2016. But it's also I think it's a pretty cool idea to really nurture that client relationship, is to do marketing activations with your clients. So recording podcast episodes with your clients, for example. Recently, I recorded one for the launch of one of my clients, Tarzan K. And she shared value in her own on what she knows best. But we also looked at her previous brand, her new brand. We talked about how important it is to rebrand at the right time for you. She also shared really cool insights about her perspective as a client. Like, what are the things that she thinks about when she was choosing a designer? And it is marketing. It is educational content for designers, but it's also marketing content for clients, for potential clients. For a potential client, I actually recently had a lead who saw my live. It was a live stream with Tarzan. She saw my live stream on YouTube and she said, "It's so cool that you do that with your clients." Like, they just see the relationship that you have and you're like, I want to work with that person because I can see that person, I'm going to connect with her. I'm going to have fun with her. And especially nowadays where there's so much technology and, you know, all these bots and robots and all of that, people need that human connection. We seek human connection, even the introverted people like me. You know, we do want to connect people and we choose service providers or experts based on personal and human values. So that's a really fun way that you can, you know, do something a little different, do an interview with your client, talking about their experience of working with you, but also talking about their genius zone. You can do blog posts, collaborative blog posts with your clients. There's a lot of different things that you can do beyond just writing, you know, getting a testimonial and creating a case study with your client.
Yeah, definitely. And I also want to add to that, I mean, it's very similar, but a little bit different. So what I did is I interviewed some people who were not my clients, but I met them at networking events. So for example, one woman, she has a skincare line and she already went through the whole process of, you know, having like, and she's been in the business for many years. So she does have brand strategy, her logo, website, like everything is completed. She's now focused more on the marketing side versus branding side. And there's like simply no room for me. However, I brought her like onto my podcast and I was asking her questions. How did you find your designer? Where did he or she came from? Because maybe that designer is not in, like on her mind anymore. Maybe that was like 6 years ago and she has no idea who that person is. Maybe that person never followed up. Like you never know. And not just that, but also it's very important for us, for all of us designers, to understand what is that the clients are looking for. And that interview probably, you know, is attracting other people who are in the skincare business and they're going to hear that I do branding. So it doesn't have to be that you're interviewing just your clients, but maybe people who are in the very similar shoes but have never worked with you. That doesn't mean that they will not in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And in addition to that, I think it's also important to follow up with people that ended up not working with you. Like this for me has been a huge lead generation strategy. I know it sounds weird because, well, these clients didn't want to work with you in the first place. They didn't want to work with me in the moment for numbers of reasons. Rarely it's personal. Like very rarely the person's like, ooh, I don't like that person. I'm not going to work with them. It might be, you know, it might be time commitment. It might be financial. Maybe something came up in their life. Like there are so many different reasons why people don't work with us. And it's, as I said, it's really personal. But reaching out to them a couple months later, 6 months, maybe even a year later, and see if something changed, that's been huge for me. And a lot of times, I'm not saying that I close every single client who decided to, you know, ghost me, absolutely not. But the relationship that I have with these people, with these clients, is amazing because that's also part of being indispensable. That even though you said no to me, I'm still checking in on you. I'm still checking out your brand. I'm still checking out what you're doing because I really want to work with you. I actually will be reaching out to one of my lost leads in a few months. It was for a really big project. And they said that they couldn't commit at the time. And they're potentially talking with another designer. But that was in November last year. And they have a huge online store. So, and I know they're doing really well because I'm seeing like all their new collections and stuff. I know they're doing well, but it's been almost a year. I'm like, what the heck is going on?
Yeah, you never know.
I thought by then. Because yeah. One of the objections they had is that it was too long of a timeline, it was a little too expensive, and they're potentially going to be working with someone cheaper. So I'm curious just to reach out to understand, you know, what's happening, invite them to join on like a quick call maybe and see what's up. I'm not saying I'm definitely going to convert them, but it's worked in the past with a few clients where they told me that they found someone else or they told me it's not a good time. And then they just, you know, go on, live their life, run their business, kind of forget about this crazy, stupid idea of rebranding. What was I thinking? But then here you are a couple of months later reminding them that, hey, actually, that was a great idea. Let's do it. Like, I'm still super inspired and motivated to work with you. How can we make this work? Sometimes maybe it's about, you know, making a deal, like finding a deal that will work for both of you. I'm not saying doing it for cheaper specifically, but maybe finding a compromise somewhere in the way that you structure your offers. But yeah, just don't forget about those leads because that's already the beginning of your relationship with that client.
Yeah. So not just following up with your previous clients, but with leads as well. Now, where are your leads coming from?
Most of them are still word of mouth. I don't post, as mentioned before, I don't really post marketing, like client-focused marketing content. Most of them are from word of mouth, from podcast episodes, from workshops. Interestingly, since I moved to Switzerland 2 years ago, I did do some networking here, really getting out of my comfort zone. But, you know, new place, I do want to get some local clients. So I did actually do some networking, and I'm part of a couple of women-led communities here where I run a couple of workshops. So that's also, like, I think a really great strategy is to just run. In London, I ran a couple of lunch and learns in co-working spaces that actually brought a few clients. And that was like 20-minute sessions, which is crazy, you know? But co-working spaces, they love that stuff. I don't know if that's still the case. Back then, it was around the whole pandemic era. A lot of people were working in co-working spaces, and people just, like, those spaces love having people come in, and, you know, people are grabbing lunch, learning something new. You're not selling your services directly. You're just providing value. You're just showing that, hey, I know my stuff and I can, you know, I can help you get there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you know, but I was the owner of a co-working space. We sold it in 2021 because pandemic killed it, basically. Because the whole goal for our co-working space was come hang out with a bunch of strangers, meet people, and during the pandemic, that just doesn't work.
Yeah, of course. And after that, a lot of companies, they just allowed people to work from home.
Home, exactly.
Go home, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then nobody would just, like, make a decision. Yeah, let's hang out with people that I don't know in the middle of pandemic that nobody even knew what it is at the time. And we started losing members. And then we're like, okay, we have to close before we start losing the money. Mm. But yeah, we definitely had, like, lunch and learns. And we also had a lot of events, like, after hours. So basically, it's kind of like a webinar, but in person. So, you know, people would come after like 5 or 6 p.m. and a lot of coworkers would stay to learn something new. Usually it would be like a happy hour, so they know, you know, mm-hmm. after work they can just stay for a drink and learn something new. And that doesn't mean that they have to stay for 2 hours if an event is going to be longer. They can stay for 15 minutes, 16. They can, you know, be an hour or whatever works for them and leave. But we definitely had experts, like, talking on different topics and connecting with the coworkers and getting clients through that as well.
Yeah, I think it's a great strategy. And for me as an introvert, for example, it's much easier to do 20 minutes of speaking, actually, than being in
a room
and forcing myself. Yeah, like, because here, like, people are coming, or most of the time coming to listen to you, and they pay attention, right? When you're in a room full of people and you have to, like, scan the room and be like, okay, who here can I connect with? I don't know. I can't do it. I tried and I read books about it. And I even had, like, got a power hour session with a coach to increase my self-confidence. I laid on the floor with some friends, made me do this self-confidence exercise of laying down on the floor in one of the most busy areas of London, which was a nightmare. But, you know, we can't really change who we are at our core. I'm introverted, and I just need to find ways that work for me to market myself and get myself out there.
Yeah, definitely. And so, yeah, I actually had a question somewhere in the middle, and then we started talking about networking events, but it was about how can designers who maybe don't have that many leads or didn't have that many previous clients, how can they nurture the, like, relationships when the problem is, or their challenge is really, like, getting new clients?
It's a tough one. And I'm glad you brought it back, because I think it's an important question to kind of topic to talk about. It's a tough one because my answer is, if you have any sort of clients you work with in the past, reach out to them. Even if you haven't talked in 6 months, 12 months, whatever, reach out to them, even if it was a small project, at least to practice having conversations with clients that are outside of, hey, here's the deliverable. Hey, can you give me feedback and all of that? Because it is practice, and it might be a little bit weird at first, you know, changing that mentality of, like, client service provider mentality to, oh, we actually on the same level and we're part of a team and we're helping each other. But if you're struggling to get clients, I know we mentioned a couple of, like, strategies to find clients here. If you're in the process of like finding new clients, I would say like just create, like share your work as much as possible. And it's funny because with my students who have been doing this for some time, I tell them like include valuable content, educational content, but also share your work. But at those very initial stages, screw the educational stuff. Like, don't bother coming up with color psychology tips and all of that, because your job right now is to grow your portfolio, grow your experience of relationship building, just getting as many clients as possible. And the truth is, clients do care about like the work, the visual aspect of the work first. And then once you start the conversation, making them understand of the value that good quality design will bring to their business. It's a skill, it's practice. But at those very initial stages, I think I made the mistake of wanting to, you know, educate my client audience a lot. I think it was a mistake because I think that it made content creation so much harder. Whereas sharing about the work that you've done, repeating yourself, you know, it's not like making one post on Instagram and be like, okay, this is out in the wild, I can never share about this again. No, share every single bit about it throughout all different channels, especially channels where your clients are. If your clients are not on Instagram, stop wasting time on Instagram. If your client,
I saw that you mentioned recently
about LinkedIn. If your type of client is on LinkedIn, go all in on that. If you don't like LinkedIn, nope, I don't care that you don't like LinkedIn. This is where your clients are. Like, this is where they spend their time. If your
and then
clients,
figure out how you're going to actually like LinkedIn, because LinkedIn is really not that bad. It seems like boring, but it's really not that bad.
I think it's because of this whole corporate nature of LinkedIn, right? A lot of people think like, oh, it's only for corporates. I see my husband checks LinkedIn as often as I check Instagram. But at the core of it is just a social media platform. Like, that's what it is. And you can use it in exactly the same way as any other social media platform. You need to find your way of using it, what voice you're going to have there, how you're going to connect with people. There are so many resources online. You just need, again, it's, you know, going back to what we said before, it's about commitment. It's about actually practicing and doing the thing, even though you're not going to get results tomorrow. So sharing work, if you don't have work to share, create work to share. Practice on website rebrands. I saw this reel recently of someone, there is this company that does Show It website template, Tonic. You may have heard of them, Tonic Sideshop.
Maybe if I was to say it, yeah.
They created this reel about redesigning Beyonce's website using their templates. What a great idea. You know, like they spend 30, 40 minutes maybe just having fun, being in their element, designing things for fun and making marketing content out of it. And you can create a whole case study around it. And then in that case study, you can educate. But first is going to be the visual thing that grabs your audience's attention. Like, oh, look at that. She can redesign Beyonce's website. Maybe some people will even think that Beyonce hired you to design their website. Yeah. And then they can go and learn more.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of this with us. Is there anything else you would like to add to our conversation, like any last tips or thoughts? And if not, please tell us where people can find you, such as your website, Instagram, TikTok. Like, what is your social media platform?
My social media platform is definitely Instagram. I mean, that's because my audience is designers, is creatives, and they hang out on Instagram. It's funny, maybe, you know, they listen to this episode like, oh no, we need to go somewhere else. And they're all going to leave. And then I'm going to stay here without any students to teach on Instagram. No, but in all seriousness, every platform is great when you know how to use it to attract whoever you want to attract. But my last words, I think there's so much happening in our industry right now. I know there's a lot of fear. There's like, new freelancers are freaking out about the future of our industry. I would say that, you know, we mentioned like having fun in your business and thinking less about the transaction. And I think if you embrace that mindset a little bit in the way that you show up. If not every single piece of content is about getting the client to submit an inquiry, if not every single, I don't know, email that you send is about conversions and all of that, but you just show, you know, show up having fun, doing what you do, a lot of the times you'll find that marketing becomes much easier. Of course, there's much more to it, but I don't think that we need to, with everything happening in our industry, I don't think that we need to freak out and change all of our ways. I think instead, why I'm kind of pushing this whole topic of embracing human connection and becoming indispensable for your clients is because this is the time to really focus on that, focus on nurturing those relationships, showing up as a human and seeing your clients as human beings that you're help and you do what you love doing. You love creating, you love designing, and not just thinking about the next shiny thing. So that's kind of my two cents. But I really had fun having this conversation. If you guys want to catch me online, then yeah, you can come and see me on my Instagram, 16creative. And not very active on TikTok. I haven't cracked TikTok, to be honest. I wish I did when it was, can't even remember what it was, like the music, Musical.ly. No, it was something else. The music app. I wish I did crack it back then.
Yeah. I honestly repost reels that I post on Instagram and then forget about it. It's just like a platform that for some reason I don't pay much attention to.
But I've seen designers achieve amazing things that there.
Definitely.
But again, you know, whatever works for you. Commit to what you enjoy and what works and where your clients are. And I think if you really commit to it, like ask yourself really, currently, am I really doing the thing? Am I really making an effort to show up where my client is? A lot of the time, if we're really honest with ourselves, it's probably like,
the answer is, yeah,
probably not. I'm probably looking for excuses. I'm probably, you know, downloading the next freebie or signing up for the next workshops, which you should. You should definitely show up for our workshops. but it's also about doing and not just absorbing content.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm sure the designers have gained a lot of valuable information from you in today's episode, and we'll be in touch on Instagram.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the great conversation.
Thank you for joining us today on The Profitable Graphic Designer. In addition to this podcast, we have created some amazing online courses to help you set up your business, get more clients, and scale to the income level you desire. If you need help developing your graphic brand or web portfolio so it stands out, if you want to learn how to create proposals new clients will say yes to, if you're still trying to figure out how much to charge for your services, and if becoming the go-to designer for your dream clients is your goal this year, then I invite you to enroll in my signature 12-week program, The Profitable Designer, or one of our other specialized online courses. To learn more about it and get started, visit eventiveacademy.com. See you next time.